Welcome to the Sharp 600, brought to you by Covers.com. I'm Rob Cressy, and I'm super excited to be jamming with you. And joining me to talk about upcoming NFL action is Ryan Noonan, director of betting at 4for4 Football. You can follow him on Twitter at Noonan. Ryan, great to have you back on the show.
Thanks for having me, Rob. We talked a few months ago. I think we were talking golf or a major or something like that, but I know we both were just dying to get football here, and we were just talking before we got started. It is on the come, man. It is here. We got preseason football. We got regular season drafts with our friends going on. It is a fantastic time of year. So excited to talk shop with you.
And speaking of the golf side of things, so after you came on the pod, we were already following each other, even though you and I had never connected before. So I just continued to see what you were doing. And I saw you talking about how all these second place finishes that you had, and then you nailed a winner, correct?
Yeah. It's one of those things, Rob, where it's like you always remember the ones that didn't hit. You remember the seconds. Actually, I think when we talked, it was the Louis Oosthuizen second. I think we had Louis at 60-1. I think I got him at 66, maybe a points bet, leading into the weekend, leading on Sunday, heading into the 16th of that ROM run, and then, pulls one OB, and it just, the dream falls apart. It's too soon because Russell Henley did me so poorly last week with his almost wire-to-wire win, and then just at the end, didn't even cash a top six each way for me. I had him at 33-1 to win. Still would have cashed the six, but he falls out of the playoffs, the seventh. It was brutal. Betting on golf is pleasurable when you hit it, but man, it's such a journey.
That missed putt was dirty. For those who didn't see it, Henley missed a three-footer to send it to, I believe, what was like a seven-way playoff. But yeah. And you saw it, it immediately missed, and you're just like, oh, my goodness. But we're not here to talk about golf. We are here to talk about the upcoming NFL season. And when I looked at this week's podcast, I felt like we're in a dead period when it comes to sports betting, specifically on the football side of things, because college football is a week or 2 weeks away, depending on if we're looking at week zero or week one. NFL, a few from there. Sure, we've got preseason football action to bet on, but at the same time, it's not exactly the most reliable, not exactly the sexiest, even though I'm seeing that. I think it was unders were 14-2 for the first 16 games or something along those lines. So sure, we could talk preseason action, but I think we're better served if we look forward and talk about betting mindset, what's on our mind. What do we like? And I think there's two big opportunities that I think you've got great expertise on. One, the correlation between fantasy football and sports betting. And two, the way that you think about prop betting, because last year, prop betting was a big victory for me. It was newer to my flow because of the number of options that FanDuel, DraftKings, all of the different sports books now have as options. So instead of just, hey, we've got 16 games a week, now there's a myriad of options all over the place. The challenge being, all right, Elijah Moore over under 47.5 yards for this game. Well, I know who he is. I know the Jets. I know who they're playing. But I don't have an informed way of saying why would he get more or less than 47.5 yards. And then you say we can do this for 200 different players. So I'm curious on your process specifically on how you choose and evaluate props that you're going to be betting.
Yeah, it's a great conversation, Rob, and I love talking about it too. So I think my process has probably changed a little bit this year. We can get into that too. But I think just starting at like a high level place where you're trying to build some projections, where you're looking into, some 50,000 foot view stuff from a season long standpoint, when you start to build out projections, right? You want to look at pace of play, how many plays do we think a team is going to run? You want to look at market share for a player, like knowing, okay, there's a large difference when you start to look at if this guy's going to get, say, 15% of the targets versus maybe a week where there's 22 to 23% of the targets. So building out projections that way allows you to be a little bit more granular. Then you can get into matchup specifics, right? How do we expect this game to play out? Looking at spreads and totals, team totals are a huge thing that I've leveraged in the market for years that I absolutely love to bet, because people, when they're thinking of sports betting, they're thinking spreads first, and we get into totals. But I think there's a huge market for team totals too. Like when books price out totals, they aren't necessarily pricing a team total. Their team total is part of building their model, but like when those things move, when the line moves based on action, the team totals move with it as well. So we spend so much time worrying about key numbers in spreads and totals, and I think that that's a huge piece of it too. So that goes into the prop building standpoint. Now we have some of the best projections. Just again, you're gonna have everyone on there that's gonna come on and tell you that their site is the best. 4 for 4 has been involved in the Fantasy Pros Accuracy Challenge for years, using our projections from John Paulson. We've built, started last year. It was in beta. We've launched it now this year on our site as part of our betting package. We basically are leveraging Paulson's projections into a prop tool that allows us to not only get season-long props, but also weekly props as well, that are building all of these things in there. We can basically pull it by book. And it's just an incredibly actionable tool to reference props. So you don't even have to really do some of the mental gymnastics that you're talking about, Rob. We've kind of done some of that work for you.
And with that in mind, I think that's an interesting point, because whenever I hear, oh, build your model, I'm like, that's fantastic for the people who understand how to build models. But for the everyday sports bettor who's going to be chopping up with their friends at the bars on the weekends, we're not exactly rolling up and being like, hey, let me tell you about the brand new model that I built. It just doesn't work that way. Certainly knowing that, I would say the majority of us use some form of tailing people's picks, confirmation on I like this and Ryan also likes this. Oh, now all of a sudden I see that and that's good there. So what I'm hearing is, and what I actually learned from my own consumption last year, is for me or you, in order to play in the prop market and be an informed bettor, you want some sort of analytical tool behind you to help support things, because the sea of knowledge is so vast that your edge is not going to be there, and you need something to try and help unearth what some of the gold or what some of the opportunities could be. Because I see a lot of tools, and you're right, everyone's got different ones, so there's ways of doing things. So whether it's a 0 to a 10 or a red, yellow, green, or whatever that is, essentially what we're looking for is, all right, what are the opportunities that we're looking for? Let's bring those to the top. And now I can start to make an informed opinion on, all right, Matthew Stafford over under passing yards. He's going up against Baltimore. We're seeing that he's coming off a little bit gimpy. So now you can start to create your own narrative around all of this. One thing that you mentioned that I don't hear much around the world of prop betting is key numbers. It's something that we're used to in totals as well as spreads on, hey, if these are crossing key numbers. But are there key numbers when it comes to receptions or yardage? And I guess in touchdowns, it's going to be a 0.5. But yeah, I'm trying to figure out how we can best quantify things, because the more that we create a process or a framework for ourselves that says, hey, the average threshold is, for example, 50 yards, 70 yards, 30 yards, whatever it is, and maybe that can be broken down on wide receiver 1, 2, or 3, or running back 1, or a third down back. Is there anything around key numbers when it relates to prop betting?
Not that I know of. And I think that you make a good point too, because right, we can sometimes get stuck in a little bit of an echo chamber, maybe in the content space too, where we are dealing with maybe some things and have access to some things that maybe the average person doesn't have. So to your point, like, not everyone has a tool and not everyone's going to have access. Not everyone's going to run over to 4for4.com, sign up for the betting package and get our tool. So leveraging some of the confirmation bias that you already have is fantastic, right? Looking at normal spreads and totals like we were talking about and knowing, okay, here's how I think this game is going to go. Now, does this prop number confirm my priors? Do I expect, you know, Calvin Ridley to be playing from behind? His prop reception number is at 6.5. Yeah, you know what? They're playing, you know, at home against the Bucks. They're going to have it's going to be a high volume passing game. I expect there's going to be a lot of Ridley targets in this game. He's probably going to convert. Now, when you can take that preconceived notion and run it against someone's projections or a tool that you've outsourced, and you feel even better. But again, I know that's probably not the average listener. So there isn't really a key number. I would say know that books know that we want to chase overs. They know that we want to take overs in season-long props. They know that we want to take overs in games, and we want to take overs in weekly props. So there's just so many outs in an under. So I think having some sort of natural inclination to lean under and then having to be really blown away by the number to take an over, I think is going to set you up to be, you know, positive EV more times than not. We all want to sit there and watch the game, Rob, and chase, you know, DK Metcalf over 90 and a half yards receiving because it's fun. We want overs. No one wants to sit there groaning every time he catches a ball. And the books know this. You log into a sports book, it's the same thing. They put those touchdown props up there for you first because they know like that is really soft. People want to chase it. They don't have to get too in the weeds with prop tools or projections. I want to know that Derrick Henry is going to score two touchdowns this week. I'm going to lay ridiculous juice on over 1.5, and you're probably drawing debt. So again, think about the mentality of a book too. They want you to take some of these things on purpose.
And actually, that's a beautiful thing that you just said around the juice, because that's the next part of prop betting that comes into play, because we're used to playing minus 110, minus 108, minus 113 on our variety of air quotes traditional bets. But then all of a sudden, like the Derrick Henry thing, you can start to see minus 137, minus 145, minus 180. Like there's things that come out there where I have to start double checking myself because I'm not exactly feeling all warm and fuzzy inside when I see a bet that maybe I'm tailing someone and they're like, yeah, we're coming in at minus 180. And I'm like, not exactly really excited about doubling my unit size just to try and get this, but it is something that we do need to be aware of in prop betting because it is a very customary thing. So to be an informed prop bettor, you need to be aware around the pricing because the pricing is not just going to be a traditional minus 110. And if you haven't done it before, you're going to get a quick lesson in it because you're going to be like, I like this, I like this, I like this. And you're like, wow, I'm on three overs and all the pricing is minus 130 and above. And that is normal. And it's something that make sure you understand it before you dive in because you don't want to go 0-3 or see a negative bankroll on some of the bets that you're making.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. It's the same for traditional betting, to your point, where we're talking about, you know, spreads and totals. We want to get in as early as possible to try to get some closing line value. And it can't speak to that point enough in the prop market. And again, this is not for everyone. So this is, if you want to get really into it, you have to be able to know when is the time to do so. And we started to see it a little bit last year where I felt like there were a few books that wanted to get ahead of the others and started to get earlier and earlier in their release time. But really Friday afternoon, Friday early evening is when the majority of stuff starts to hit. And typically you're going to see juice movement. Like you said, you know, if we're talking about a Derrick Henry rushing yards prop, right? So let's say 100 yards, they're going to move that juice before they start to move that line. So your best bet, again, not for everyone, not realistic, right? You're either, maybe it's the end of your workday on Friday, maybe you're commuting home, so it's not really super viable for you. But man, you want to be as quick into Friday afternoon, Friday early evening line shopping as you can, especially again, if you're not leveraging any tools or resources, if you're just opening the app and scrolling, you want to get in as soon as possible because they don't come out juiced. They're just going to get juiced as soon as they get destroyed by people like me who are just waiting to hit them.
And you mentioned a key thing, and we've mentioned this numerous times on the podcast. This relates both to prop betting, live betting, as well as all bets that you're going to do. You need to line shop, obviously, depending on what state you're in or country and the legalization around things. But it's very advantageous to have multiple sports books because certainly in the prop market, you can see Derrick Henry 90 and a half one place, 97 and a half in another, and 82 and a half in another. And you're like, well, wait a second. Why is this variance? I don't care why there's a variance. It's your opportunity to get some sort of an advantage one way or another. And not that we're looking to middle these things, but you will see opportunities where they do present themselves one way or another if you're looking to get cute.
Yeah, for sure. It is. It is something that you'll see. We're talking about like little edges, and we have to be grinding little edges like that. We don't have many edges to begin with. So if I'm getting a 5 yard difference in a, you know, reception yardage prop or whatever it is, like I need any edge that I can get. So even if my number happens to be clear of the larger of the two, I want the shorter number every time, right? We need any edge we can possibly get.
All right, Ryan. So what I want to talk about related to this is the correlation between fantasy sports and betting that we're doing. And right now, many of us, myself and yourself included, it's fantasy football season. And we're spending a ton of time doing football research. And it's beautiful because this is the gift that keeps on giving. On one side, I'm doing sports betting research. On one side, I'm doing fantasy football research. And this knowledge is supporting each other. And we all have decisions to make. We're very emotional about these things. We have relationships with some of these players. So there's information that we have intimate knowledge of that we may or may not be able to take advantage of. And I'm going to give you two examples from my own world. So I'm in a keeper league. We keep two players. And my option is DeAndre Swift in the fifth or Myles Gaskin in the 10th. So originally I'm like, boom, sign me up for some DeAndre Swift, except for the fact that he's injured and Dan Campbell's like, yeah, we really like Jamal Williams. And I'm like, not exactly happy about this. Let me jump over to Myles Gaskin. I'm like, 10th rounder, sign me up. He was great at the end of the year. Then Brian Flores is like, by the way, we have a three running back committee now and Malcolm Brown's going to run with the ones in the first preseason game. And I'm like, wait, what is going on here? So now I'm literally having a data feed of DeAndre Swift and Myles Gaskin into my head on a regular basis. I've done more Myles Gaskin research than anybody in the world, but this is a great example of, all right, what is the opportunity that I have knowing all this Myles Gaskin research that I've done for season-long props? So I believe his yardage total is something like 700 yards one way or another. If you are me or someone in a similar situation like this, how are we taking this knowledge that we have on the fantasy side and translating that into futures bets or prop bets that we're going to be making during the year?
Yeah, it's hard. I think you make a great point. It's hard to not get emotionally tied, especially in situations like yours, because these are keeper league decisions too. So there's a little bit more of that like ownership piece of this is my guy. And we become married and we always kind of over-evaluate the guys already on our roster in those situations. Like we romanticize them taking us to the next level. So it is hard to do so. Again, it is how to leverage them and how to, you know, correlate them a little bit is tricky because, you know, it becomes, you're thinking of it kind of from a macro and micro standpoint. You know, how am I really trying to, what are my expectations for this guy and how can I really leverage that? When I'm looking at running backs in the prop market, when we're talking weekly, that's different. When I'm talking season-long prop bets, man, I have to be absolutely blown away by the number to bet an over on a running back. There's the most attrition at the position. They are the least likely to play a full 17-game slate to play all their halves. There are just so many outs for a running back to come under his prop. So I don't mind it chasing an over in season, you know, in a weekly matchup, but over props, man, I'm worried. I wish you had another keeper option too. I wish there was a third guy that we could discuss. Cause those are tricky spots for sure.
Yeah, I would have loved to be able to throw Cam Akers in the 10th round, except for the fact that he's no longer there. So throw that away. So maybe with this Dolphins example, could this be an opportunity to say, well, wait a second. If I look at the recipe for success in the NFL, is it a three-headed monster of average at best running backs? Like, does that make me feel better or worse about the long-term viability of the Dolphins, knowing that, all right, we have Tua who has uncertainty, albeit there's probably more opportunity for him to get better. People seem to like Flores. People want to buy into the narratives of the Dolphins being good. But then I look in that running back room and I'm like, well, I don't exactly like anything that I'm seeing there.
Yeah, it's tough because it was a surprise that they didn't go after, especially with all the draft equity early in the rounds that they had first, second, third round, they had multiple picks, that they did not address the running back position. And really their answer was, we added Malcolm Brown, which was thought maybe tongue in cheek at the time, but it turns out like they seem to really like him. And we were all surprised last year, Cam Akers, you probably were, you know, holding Cam Akers thinking he's going to hit the ground running. They're supplementing Daryl Henderson with Malcolm Brown on passing downs. Like, people think of him as a bigger bodied guy. Maybe he's a goal line short yardage guy. Sean McVay, who we all seem to think is sharp, was leveraging Malcolm Brown in a passing game role. So like thinking, all right, Myles Gaskin might get that passing down work. That might be more, typically is. We know that typically a target is worth like 2.5 times what a carry is in fantasy typically. So those are high volume or high value touches. Gaskins doesn't even really have the surefire passing down role based on how clubs have used Malcolm Brown before. So same thing, DeAndre Swift, outstanding pass catching running back, decent offensive line. It's really the only thing that entire roster has going for them. But they bring on Jamal Williams, who's been annoying to Aaron Jones users for years because he's valuable in the passing game. So, like, it's a tough spot. It's a tough spot for you. I wish there was a better answer.
All right, Ryan. So last thing I want to talk about are narratives around teams we like and teams we don't like. And as I was preparing for this, I was like, I'm just going to look at the standings from last season and see what jumps out to me. So here's some narratives that are easy to buy into just in the AFC, and you can jump around anywhere. The Chargers are going to be good because Anthony Lynn is no longer there and Justin Herbert is in his second year. It's a very easy narrative for us to jump into. Number two, the Patriots are just going to be better because they're the Patriots. Number three, the Steelers aren't going to be 500 because of Ben Roethlisberger. And number four, the Titans are just going to run away with the division. In all four of those instances, took zero thought process. It was very easy for me, the casual bettor, just to create a narrative around. And whenever I think this way, it's immediately a red flag for me. Because if sports betting was this easy, there would not be giant casinos in Las Vegas. So I'm curious on your end, are there any teams that you are higher on than most? Or any teams that you might be fading or don't like as much as other people do?
Good question. I want to talk about your narratives real quick, if I can, too. Like, there's questions in the Chargers. I'm a little lighter on the Chargers, I guess, than the public. Bringing in a new system on both sides of the ball is really challenging. Brandon Staley ran a completely different offense than what the Chargers have run in the past as far as single high safety and two high safety looks. And he was able to execute that with Aaron Donald and Jalen Ramsey. I don't know that they have the horses to execute that. So that's kind of a question of, is it round peg square hole thing? Does he say, hey, look, I did a lot with this system. We're just going to do it, not knowing if they really have the ability to do so. And then, you know, Anthony Lynn is not a guy in game. He's terrible, indisputable. But I think there's something to be said of how they kind of constructed game plans to set up Justin Herbert. So I think there could be some regression. We typically see pretty large jumps from first year to second year quarterbacks, but we also don't see first year quarterback seasons like Herbert has. So is there any meat left on the bone for the jump? Patriots defense is going to be terrific. They got to answer the quarterback questions. So that's a big one. Your third one was Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh, I think, is being left for dead unnecessarily. The problem is that the schedule is absolutely brutal for them. I know that hits home. I know you're a Steelers guy. I think there's some opportunities in the prop market on Ben overs. If he stays upright for 17, like his touchdown number is like 24.5, 25. Like, he's throwing for 30 if he plays 17 games in that offense. I already bet Najee Harris over. That number, rest of that number is gone, but like, that is a third down back, three down back. They're going to ride. So, and that defense is still going to be terrific if the corners can hold. So teams I am high on. I think the last narrative was the Titans. I think Jacksonville is a really interesting long shot to win that division at 8-1. I know that that's a little bit out there, but again, 8-1 is really nice odds. I think that's over at Caesars. I think that there's a lot of offensive weapons there. There's some young talent defensively. I question what happens defensively with Tennessee. If they have any injuries, that is really dicey. We know Julio is terrific, but he has trouble staying on the field. Same thing with A.J. Brown. They have any regression, something happens to Derrick Henry, there's a lot of outs. The Colts scare me a lot, and I'm not worried about the Texans. So I think that there's some interesting value on Jacksonville. Washington, they, I think, should be favorites to win that division. You can get them at plus 260. I like them to win the division. I like plus 150 to make the playoffs, and I like over 8.5 wins. So basically a trio of bets on Washington. And anything that has you bullish on the Buccaneers, give me that. Give me alt win totals over. Over 12.5, you can get plus money on. You can get them at 4-1, I believe, to what are they? Best regular season record at plus 650 over at Rivers. And they are minus 185 on FanDuel to win that division. There is no shot anyone else is winning that division. I don't typically like to lay that kind of juice, but man, like, They are not only running it back with starters on both sides, no coaches left, which is so rare. Like nowadays, the guy either like goes to get the bag in free agency or like a coordinator gets plucked. They had 31 guys play over 200 snaps last year. They're all back. And they added Gio Bernard as another layer. They really didn't have that pass catching back last year. OJ Howard's back. Like the Buccaneers are going to be outstanding again if Tom Brady stays healthy. I'm willing to bet on that happening. So those are a couple of teams that I like more than the public.
Here's the one thing that I've learned over my years of being a football fan. I do not trust Ryan Fitzpatrick. For while I see every single narrative for why Washington's defense is amazing and Terry McLaurin and Antonio Gibson, and they're just going to be absolutely incredible, Ryan Fitzpatrick is just too salacious. He's like the drunk girl at the bar, and you think that you're in for a fun night, and then all of a sudden it just like throws up all over the place, and you're like, wow, how did that just happen? And Fitzpatrick just continues to get older, and I just don't have the confidence in the most important position. I get it, but Ryan Fitzpatrick is just way too shiny for me that we're just, once again, quick narrative. Oh, Ryan Fitzpatrick's going to come in and be awesome. And he's been this roller coaster his entire career. And I'm just not ready to continue to bet that he's going to be the guy. And if he's not the guy, now we're looking at Kyle Allen. And are we really feeling all warm and fuzzy about a Ryan Fitzpatrick, Kyle Allen quarterback duo? And it just seems like that narrative is getting swept under the rug, even if all the other pieces from Washington are appealing.
Yeah, well, we saw Tyler Haneke in the playoffs, so I think he'd get the first run of it, and they re-signed him there too. And again, not all, also, again, Kyle Allen or Haneke, not super exciting either way. But I think you can make the same case that, again, I don't know. I'm going to cross off the Eagles. I don't think that they're really in contention for this division. And I'm going to cross off all the mess that the Giants have too. I think that the defense played a little bit above its head. I don't trust the offensive line or Daniel Jones. So we're really talking about a Cowboys Washington thing here. And we're talking about Fitz being the drunk girl down the road. The Cowboys defense walks into the bar drunk. They're already wasted. So I'm asking them to really play above anything that I can expect to do, especially in the back half. That is a really beat up secondary that is going to have their hands full. Now I know the offense, what we saw in brief time with Dak last year, again, they were just playing from behind, trying to make up for all the problems that the defense put them in. Dak's throwing for 400 yards, rushing for another 50 and a couple scores, kind of inflating things. But the offense is going to be incredible. I worry about that defense. And I think they're such a public team, Dallas, that I think that they're inflated in the market. They're only going to get more inflated by us watching them for an hour up close on Hard Knocks up until the season starts. So I just think there's value with that defense in Washington seems to be a little bit more of a floor that I trust. And I think that they can navigate really smart offensive coordinator with Scott Turner, regardless of who ends up being the quarterback.
Ryan, love talking football with you. Where can everybody connect with you?
Appreciate it, Rob. You can find me on Twitter at Ryan Noonan. All of our great stuff going on at 4 for 4. You're going to want to check out our betting plan. It gives you access to everything under the umbrella at 4 for 4. It's going to get you all of these projections, these tools we're talking about, all of our DFS stuff. If you are in the best ball streets now on Underdog or FFPC in high stakes leagues, we have content coming out there as well. So definitely want to check out 4 for 4.
And I want to hear from you. Who is a team where the narrative that is out there is not the same way that you're seeing it? You can hit me up on all social media platforms at Rob Cressy. Also, make sure to go to @covers. Check out all the sports betting information that they've got going on. And remember, if you want to be a sharp, don't be a square with your bankroll. Be disciplined with your money management. The book of the devil hit you with the rap level of 10. The 1, 2, 3, your pen. I get action. So everybody jump with your rope. Looking like the way the sound pump, pumping in your black trunk. And let loose with the juice when I do rock. I'm too hot. Some say I got more juice than 2.